This is Morning Edition on WNYC. The acquittal of George Zimmerman in the shooting death of Trayvon Martin has reignited a lot of conversations about race, including the way black men are perceived by others and the consequences. As part of his Micropolis series, WNYC's Arun Venugopal asked African-American men how they avoid getting profiled.
In the wake of Trayvon Martin's death, and now with the acquittal of the man who shot him, the hoodie is no longer just a garment. It's become a symbol. A lot of protesters, including elected officials, wore their hoodies in defiance this weekend. But for some black men, throwing a hooded sweatshirt on isn't a casual decision.
The whole thing is get smarter.
Johnny Wilson is an activist from Harlem who was demonstrating for Trayvon Martin last week, before the verdict came down. He's fully aware that he can change people's perceptions of him based on what he's wearing.
If you know that they stereotyping you and it's not right, don't just keep doing it. Put on a suit once in a while. Change your appearance.
But even wealthy, accomplished black men say they have to grapple with the fact that they are sometimes perceived as physically threatening. Sean Paul is a corporate attorney and a stylish one. When we met, he was wearing a Hugo Boss suit and Antonio Maurizi shoes. He's an average-sized guy, not especially big, but even then, this is what runs through his mind when the subway is practically empty.
You end up going in the last cart or the middle cart, and there's maybe just one person, one Caucasian, either male or female, maybe coming from a workout or going to work on a Saturday morning in that cart. I do feel uneasier about being the only African-American there with them.
Why? Do you think that they're worried about you?
That's correct. That's correct.
Sean is attuned to his environment in a way that isn't unusual to hear from African-Americans. Ferran McClurkin says the way he behaves around the police reminds him of an interview he heard on CNN, where actor LeVar Burton describes what he does when the police pull him over.
What he does is he takes off his hat, which is the same thing that I do, and that is like almost instinctual, and he takes off his shades.
I roll down my window, I take my hands, I stick them outside the window and on the door of the driver's side because I want that officer to be as relaxed as he can be when he approaches my vehicle. And I do that because I live in America.
Right. Yeah. Ferran says it was kind of surreal that LeVar Burton, the guy from Reading Rainbow, has to do this. But if you're of a certain generation, Burton was first and foremost Kunta Kinte from the TV adaptation of Roots, Alex Haley's saga about slavery in America. For me, as a kid, Burton wasn't just a slave. He was, in a sense, the first slave whose descendants help us understand the long, quite literally tortured history of Africans in America. Burton said he taught his methods of interacting with the police to his own son, who's now 33. That passing down of knowledge is crucial. And it's something that Bill T. Jones, the Tony Award-winning choreographer and MacArthur genius, said he picked up from his father in the South.
But as soon as any, let's say, the white farmer whose land we were living on, or even more so, the state troopers showed up, everybody changed. Even my father, who was quite confident and dynamic, seemed to move slower. He said, sir. Now, he's a Southern man. He said, yes, sir. And all of his movements were suddenly very, very purposeful and very careful.
In the mid-90s, Jones was driving down the Palisades with his partner when they stopped on the side of the road. Before they knew it, Jones was being pulled out by a police officer and spread-eagled against his car. The officer told Jones he was wanted for armed robbery in Chicago, and it was only after Jones and his partner produced a recent issue of Time magazine that the officer realized his mistake. There was Jones on the cover of the magazine next to the headline, Black Renaissance, African-American artists are truly free at last. As they parted ways, Jones turned to the cop and, not forgetting what he'd been taught, said thank you.
It felt like it was almost in our DNA as black Americans at a certain point. You have to be careful because they're looking for a reason to shoot you.
That's been the code for generations of black men. But for someone like Michael Melvin Trent, who was in Union Square last week, dressing or acting any less black is simply not an option. Trent thinks it's offensive to expect black men to adapt their behavior. He says it downplays the racism in American society.
Should we modify our behavior? I can wear my hood on top of my head and be a Harvard graduate, but you would never know this until you take the time out to sit and have a conversation with me.
Located somewhere between these two poles, Michael Melvin Trent's defiance on one hand and the more adaptive approach of his peers is the path of 13-year-old Dwayne McMillan. I met Dwayne in Harlem a year ago, right after Trayvon Martin was killed. He's a smart, polite kid, and he was only beginning to realize that the rules might be different for different people. That it wasn't just about the clothes, but who's wearing them.
There was this guy talking on TV, and he was Caucasian, and he was saying that he could wear anything. He could sack his pants and have a hoodie on, and most likely cops won't bother him because of his race.
Do you think that's true?
Yes.
How does it make you feel?
It's very, very unfair. She feels like it's still the way it was before.
By which he meant a long time ago. Duane was just coming of age and recognizing that this era bears striking similarities to earlier ones. This is Micropolis. I'm Arun Vanagopal at WNYC.